Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
Our obsession with getting a perfect night's sleep has reached new heights. Psychologists and doctors have encountered this phenomenon so often they've even come up with a name for it, orthosomnia. Could chasing the perfect sleep score with apps and trackers be keeping us up at night? Well, joining me to discuss this is Professor Russell Foster, who's head of the Nuffield Laboratory of Ophthalmology and the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute at Oxford University. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning. Really delighted to join you, Claire.
So sleep trackers and apps, I mean, most of them have them, whether we want them or not, because some of them come as default on our devices now. Your general view, are they a help or a hindrance?
My general view is that they're a hindrance.
Okay.
So in theory, they could be very useful. So in the same way that if you want to lose weight, you change your eating habits, you weigh yourself in the morning, you see there's a drop in weight, and that reinforces your changed eating behavior. And the same for sort of sleep. If you're not getting the sleep that you want, an app could actually say that your changed behaviors have improved your sleep. You're getting the sleep that you want. The problem is they're just not very accurate. And that relates to the fact that, of course, our sleep is immensely dynamic. It changes between individuals. So, for example, sleep timing, whether you're a morning person or an evening person, and how much sleep you need, your sleep duration, whether you need 6 hours or you need 10 and a half. And that's the overall healthy range. And it's all about, you know, one shoe size does not fit all. And of course, these apps are just basically designed to measure the so-called perfect night of sleep. And such a thing doesn't really exist.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose it makes logical sense that we would know how we feel after a bad night's sleep or a couple of nights in a row, consecutive nights of disrupted sleep. We generally will have a good sense of how our sleep is because how we feel will tell us, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's you've nailed it, Claire, because, you know, it's all about knowing, are you getting the sleep that you need? So do you feel that you can perform optimally during the day? Do you oversleep extensively on free days? That's telling you you're probably not getting the sleep you need during the week. If you rely on an alarm clock or somebody else to get you out of bed, that's suggesting you're not getting the sleep you need. If it takes you a long time to wake up, if you feel groggy, if you've got this sleep inertia, that's another sign. If you feel sleepy, irritable, and fatigued when you are awake, if you crave a nap during the day, or if you want sugar-rich and caffeinated drinks. And importantly, it's also listening to your friends, families, and colleagues. If they're saying, you seem to be a bit more irritable, you don't seem to be so empathetic, you're doing stupid and unreflected things. These are all things that are telling you you're not getting the sleep you need. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is, it's a dynamic behavior, and there's lots we can do about getting the sleep that we need. And I think that's one of the great problems of apps, is that it may tell you inaccurately you've had a terrible night's sleep, but it's not providing you with any advice of about how to achieve the sleep that you need.
Right. And we'll come to those tricks and hints in a moment. But would you agree that we are in a health movement around towards getting good sleep, that it's very on trend at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely. I mean, those of us that remember the 80s, I'm not sure if you do, Claire.
Unfortunately.
You know, people used to come and say, oh, I've done another all-nighter. And, you know, get a sort of a clap on the back. And we've moved now to the position where people are taking their sleep much more seriously. There was a very interesting survey by Virgin phone users. And they reported that over the past 5 years, people are getting up at about the same time, but they're going to bed about 20 minutes earlier. And I think the generation coming through is taking their sleep a bit more seriously. They realize, you know, all the advantage you get from a good night of sleep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can compete then with ourselves on these apps, can't we? Because they'll tell us how we did last night in comparison to the night before, and then rate our weeks over the course of a period of time. But they that can make us anxious. And you've touched on this,
that
we can begin to feel anxious about how much sleep we're getting and the type of sleep we're getting.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, people have come up to me after public talks and said, you know, I don't get eight hours of sleep. Am I going to die? And I say, well, yeah, you're going to die, but it may have nothing to do with, you know, your 8 hours. I mean, that's a certainty. And I think that is the problem. And it's all about relying on our understanding of our sleep and our sleep needs. And that's the real priority. It's mm-hmm. it's sort of embracing our sleep and not, you know, I think so many people think of sleep as this sort of enemy that needs to be, this sort of beast that needs to be bludgeoned into submission rather than being a bit more like a naughty puppy that needs a cuddle. And so, you know, I think with kindness to ourselves, we can get the sleep that we need.
And do people say to you as well, I'm not getting enough of that really deep sleep that the app tells me I should be getting?
Well, that's the other problem. I mean, because they really aren't very good at telling you about the different stages of sleep and deep sleep. And again, somebody came up to me after a talk and said, you know, this is a great example of orthosomnia. And they were saying, I'm not sure that I believe in slow wave sleep. And I sort of said, you know, why? And they said, well, my app's telling me I'm getting very little. And I said, well, you know, they're not very accurate. And even so, what would you do about it? And this chap then said, well, what I do, I'm so concerned about it, as I set the alarm for 3 o'clock in the morning to wake myself up to find out how much deep sleep I've had, according to my app. Absolutely.
No.
And I think that's, you know, you can understand why we need the term orthosomnia, because it really is this unhealthy obsession with achieving this so-called perfect night of sleep.
Okay, well, listen, let's pull ourselves away from the anxiety of the apps now and just talk about, you know, and you touched on this earlier, how to make sure you're getting enough sleep, how to know what is enough sleep for you, and how to make sure that you're entering into a habit, I suppose, of getting that sleep that you need without relying on your phone or your smartwatch to tell you.
Yeah. So we've talked about, you know, assessing our own sleep needs and whether we are getting that good night of sleep. And if we feel that we're not, then what can we do? And there's sort of, I've divided, and I talk about this in my book, Lifetime, which talks about what you can do during the day, before bed, the bedroom, and when you're finally in bed. And one of the critical things for me, of course, is that you get that morning photon shower, you get that morning light exposure, which sets the body clock and the sleep-wake cycle and makes your sleep stable. So get that morning light, whether it's either having your breakfast by a window, going outside ideally, or maybe, you know, taking the dog for a walk or whatever, but get morning light. One other area that I think is important is that exercise can help reinforce your sort of sleep-wake timing, but make sure that it's not really close to bedtime, because that will increase core body temperature. And as part of the process of going to sleep, we show a drop in core body temperature. So, you know, don't exercise too close to bedtime. Be careful, of course, the usual one of caffeinated drinks. Ideally, don't drink, you know, strong coffee or tea after about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. But the really important point is that most people don't have a sleep problem. It's an anxiety or a stress issue. And so do the things that relax you in the evening after work, whether it's, yoga, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's going for a walk, whatever, reading a few pages of Jane Austen. But it's all about winding down. And that's sort of the greatest enemy of sleep is anxiety and stress.
Yeah, because we have very busy lives. And, you know, I find that when it comes to sleep time, that's the moment I get to myself where I can have a good think about all the things that are bothering me and the things I have to do the next day and so on. That's just not helpful, is it?
Well, it's deal with that early in the day. I mean, in our household, I mean, one of the things, you know, and it is ironic because it is that time, the only time of the day when you've got a bit of space. And so I know that when we're lying in bed of an evening, you know, we've banned in our household any discussion of household finances.
Good idea.
But we budget a time for that during the day, because those are the sorts of topics that can really make you anxious and delay sleep onset.
What about the blue light then from your phone? Because there's controversy around this, isn't there?
Well, do you know, I'm so glad you raised this, because it's clear now that you know, looking at a Kindle or looking at a smartphone is not I repeat, not going to have a big effect upon your sleep. I mean, one of the classic studies that looked at a Kindle showed that 4 hours of Kindle use on five consecutive nights delayed sleep by 9 minutes. And as one of my colleagues at the time said, well, that may be statistically significant, but that's biologically meaningless. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, when these experiments were repeated by a Scandinavian group, and rather than keeping people under dim light during the day before looking at a Kindle, they were given 5 hours, 5-6 hours of moderately bright light. And that completely eliminated any of the small effects that looking at a Kindle had. So if you're getting out and seeing some light during the day, you're going to desensitize your body clock in the evening, and it's not going to be shifted by the low levels of light from these devices.
But if you're looking on your phone at a Donald Trump press conference last thing at night, that might keep you awake.
Now, that will keep you awake, yeah. So I think the key point you've made, Claire, is it's not the light from these devices, it's the content. And there's really good evidence to show not light, but it is content. So I would certainly leave your smartphones in another room. I remember when I first got my BlackBerry years ago, I was in Australia and I was hooked to the thing. So I was looking at the Australian emails, then the European ones, then the American ones. I had no self-control at all. I had to leave the damn device in the lab so that I didn't sort of keep on looking at it.
Right.
And it is tricky, but I think you do have to be disciplined.
You do, and you have to make it part of your routine just to stop looking at those things when it comes to sleep time. I just want to go back to exercise, because you mentioned if you exercise late, you're increasing your core body temperature. Is there anything else at play? Because I'm sure people listening to this have experience of exercising late and then feeling very energized and not remotely close to falling asleep. And you might have been very tired prior to exercising.
Absolutely. It can give you that sort of big endorphin rush.
Yeah.
And so that's another problem about doing it too late. I mean, I don't want to put people off exercise. It's really important and it's great, particularly if you can exercise outside. But too close to bedtime, it can be a problem. And one of the other things that you can do, we talked about losing, you know, that drop in core body temperature before you go to sleep. Well, some people will take a warm but not hot bath, because what that does is dilate the blood vessels in the skin. Blood goes from the core of the body to the outside, and that loses heat. And so having a sort of a relaxing bath that's not too hot can also help you lose that core body temperature and make it easier to fall off to sleep.
Okay, it's all very fascinating. But anyway, the bottom line is don't pay attention to the sleep app. It's not really going to help you. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. They're not ready yet. And I before this program, I checked the latest papers. And I think it's a very consistent message. Yeah, I mean, they can tell you roughly when you went to bed and roughly when you woke up. But any further details beyond that, they're just not ready.
Russell, great to talk to you. That's Professor Russell Foster there, who's head of the Nuffield Laboratory of Ophthalmology and the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute at Oxford University.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.